This is AEW superstar, former AEW World Tag Team Champion Swerve Strickland, the mogul himself. Whose house? Swerve's house. And you are listening to the awesome, sick, electric, amazing Wrestle In.
Hello, and welcome to TNT, Total Nonstop Talking, the show where we discuss all things in the world of TNA. I am Fusa, and I am joined by my fellow hosts, Casey and Steve. And I think we should just jump right into it. Let's just get into, first of all, the new title designs. TNA did a complete overhaul of all of their championships for the rebrand. So they all have been freshly designed for TNA, like new straps, new championships, all that. You have any favorites from the bunch or anything that you really just don't like the design of?
To be honest, I like them all. I think the X Division one particularly I'm keen on. And if I had loads of free money, that would be the one I would be buying of titles. But yeah, I think they've been generally well received online and lots of comparisons with some of the other organisations' belts and how much better some of the TNA belts are than those. So it's a real positive.
Yeah, but it just seemed like over a span of a week, it just seemed like TNA just have like the best looking titles in like all of wrestling. For me, particularly, I really like the new men's tag team titles just because like how much an upgrade they are from the previous ones. Because like I always like looked at the previous tag titles before, but like until I see close up photos of the titles, I never really noticed like. I can't really make out the details of the titles on TV, but now these new tag titles, they're like, I really like how they look. And like, I know a lot of people are not really keen on the red straps simply because like compared to like WWE when they, with their color straps, but the way, like, I don't know what kind of metal they use on the titles, but they looked really good now.
I wish I hadn't compared them to the color straps in WWE. Now I'm thinking of the tag titles, and I do not like the tag titles. But yeah, I really like the titles as well. They did really great with the marketing of kind of like revealing every title one by one up until the pay-per-view and then revealing the women's tag titles like on the show itself. I think I'm going to agree with you about the tag titles. The red strap really makes them a bit more distinct from the rest of the championships. The rest of the championships are very much like just all black. I think they're all black straps, actually.
Yeah,
I think they're all black. But so yeah, those titles are a bit more distinct from the rest of them. I also appreciate like just all of them look a lot more distinct in comparison to the Impact titles. I found like the Impact titles were a lot more circular with their designs, especially like the World title. The World title I've never super liked. I thought it was kind of like when they merged the titles together a couple years ago and just completely dropped the TNA Heavyweight Championship. I didn't totally like that just because I thought the TNA Heavyweight Championship had a better design than the Impact World title. So I was kind of missing a title like that. So when they introduced the World title, I thought the design was a lot more distinct in comparison to the old championship design. But they spent the entire week releasing them up until right on the day of Hard to Kill. And speaking of Hard to Kill, I say we just jump right into a quick little review of it. I'm going to leave the all the kickoff and pre-show stuff to you guys just because I did not watch it whatsoever since it was exclusive to TNA Plus subscribers only, which in my opinion is a little dumb because the point of a pre-show is to sell the pay-per-view, and you can't really sell the pay-per-view if it's to people who already have the pay-per-view. So
I'm not
a little bit pointless there. What were you saying?
On Thriller or Fight in the UK, there was a alternate pre-show. So there was the 1 hour pre-show on the TNA Plus app, which had the matches on, but the one on Thriller had just half an hour of Tom Phillips just giving a countdown of the matches. So just a generic sort of stuff that's been on Impact programming recently in terms of, you know, just here are the matches coming up and here's a bit of the backstory behind them. So okay. It was a bit strange, but yeah.
I mean, the, something.
I think it was like more them TNA trying to sell like their new subscription service over than like them trying to sell the pay-per-view. That's the only reason I can think of why they did the pre-show like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. But like at the same time, though, I don't know. I think it would have been better to kind of have more of that focus on Under Siege. That's the next major like premium live event, as they're now calling them. Under Siege. So I think it would make more sense to have just like waited until they got around to Under Siege in a month and then use Under Siege as more of the, hey, look, we have this really great Impact. No Surrender, not Under Siege. They wait until No Surrender rolls around and then like that's when you go over the top with trying to sell TNA Plus. This is kind of like not really a point of trying to over the top sell TNA Plus because, well, A, it's the pre-show and there wasn't anything on there to make me want to subscribe to TNA Plus. I'm going to. I plan on subscribing to it before the first episode of the new Impact airs. Just for context clues, we are recording this before the first proper return episode of Impact under the TNA brand. So anything that was recorded at Snake Eyes, the three of us have tried our best to avoid spoilers for. So as of right now, we know basically nothing about the show except for like one thing that went viral on Twitter, which we will get to in a bit. But apart from that, though, I was going to subscribe properly to TNA Plus then just to kind of like have a little bit more time, you know, save a bit of money for it. But as for the pre-show itself, there was three matches.
Yeah, three matches in a segment, yeah.
Three matches in a segment. So let's get right into the first match, which I think was Tommy Dreamer versus Crazy Steve for the Digital Media title.
I think that was the third one. So the first one, certainly on the feed I saw, was the Steve Mack and Rich Swann one. So that was the first match of the relaunched TNA, which turned out to be a really good choice for that honour of being the first TNA match. I certainly enjoyed it. I think there were lots of good action in ring stuff. Macklin, I think, has just improved tremendously over the last 12 months. So it was really good to see him getting the opportunity and the win in this one. Casey, what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, it was a good starting show to like warm up the crowd. The first thing that like really stands out to me is like, well, the production in general was like a massive upgrade than what it was previously. As for the match was really good. Swann and Macklin, they have good chemistry. Also really liked Rich's gear for the match. It was like I believe a Flash Funk tribute.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, it looked really good on Rich. I hope he like keeps that gear.
Yeah, I certainly agree. The production values were superb. I think it really helped the venue they were in. It was obviously a good crowd. I think Fightful reported it was the biggest paid TNA attendance for several years. It's a real good look and feel to the whole show. So I think after that, we had the segment with Joe Hendry interrupting AJ Francis and DJ Woo Kid, who performed their debut music video called We Outside, which was not well received by the crowd in attendance, I don't think so.
What? Yeah. People not liking AJ Francis? That doesn't happen. People love AJ Francis. I thought AJ Francis was absolutely beloved. He's definitely not someone who just goes on blocking streaks over the slightest of criticisms. He's definitely not that kind of person. This is absolutely mind-blowing that people don't like him.
Yeah. Well, it turns out Joe Henry didn't like him either and had one of his trademark songs to sing about him, which was very amusing. Certainly some great moments in those songs about his failed NFN career and he's falling over the top rope and he labelled him as the Cheez-It champion. So that led to an in-ring confrontation.
Yeah, that was like the music video was hilarious. Just normal stuff from Hendry. Everything else, it's left to be desired. I don't think it was really necessary.
Yeah, it did scare me a bit that AJ Francis might be the big surprise signing, making an appearance.
There was a little bit of that. I didn't think it was going to be him just because it was on the pre-show, which something like that, you just don't give away for the pre-show. You save it for the main card. So it was kind of like a thing of well, they already revealed him, so I don't think it's him. But at the same time, though, I mean, I hope it's not him.
Yeah, so that was a big hope anyway. Yeah, fear is perhaps the wrong word. It was certainly hope that it wasn't him and there was someone else appearing later in the show.
We will get to who appeared. But the second match, I'm blanking on the second match.
This is a tag match with The System, so the newly announced faction with Eddie Edwards and Brian Myers, and them taking on the TNA original, so Eric Young and Frankie Kazarian. So you've got four real experienced veterans here in terms of just great in the ring and, great mannerisms. The action was really, really impressive in terms of, it's one of the better matches on the overall card. And naturally, I think the System faction's got a lot of focus on it now, and it was Edwards and Myers getting the victory.
Yeah. It was I really liked the pairing of EY and Frankie as the OGs. I'm a sucker for good tag team wrestling, so I really liked this match. And it's just the whole formation of this new faction of the System just really threw me off. But I was like, yeah, makes sense. Bringing in this new group, everyone that's coming in to watching TNA for the first time in a long time can get established with the talent. So yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, and I agree about Eli and Frankie in terms of, I'm hoping that they'll stay as a team for a while and hopefully get a good run towards the tag team titles at some point.
I saw the announcement of the faction getting the official name. Didn't like the name. Very basic kind of name where it was very obvious that their whole gimmick was going to be we're named the System, but we're not the System. We're the opposite of the System. We're going to break the System kind of stuff. So wasn't a huge fan of the name. And then, also not the hugest fan of the faction members. Brian Myers has always been very whatever to me for his career. Eddie Edwards has not been the same guy he was all those years ago. And Moose is fine. Moose is in and out. He can be really good or not. Alicia Edwards is the wife of Eddie Edwards, and that's about all I have for an opinion on her. Just kind of basic, throw around kind of stuff. Nothing super, no very bold hot takes here about the System. But there is still the final match of the show, or the pre-show, which was the Digital Media Championship match of Crazy Steve versus Tommy Dreamer.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably what you'd expect it to be in terms of it's a sort of slow-paced, hardcore-style match, no disqualification, lots of steel chairs, trash cans, and particularly forks. A really horrible-looking spot where Crazy Steve put loads of forks under Dreamer's shirt and then hit a cannonball. Yeah, that was made me wince a bit, but yeah, it led to Crazy Steve getting the victory and becoming the new digital media champion.
Sometimes yeah. I wonder why Tommy Dreamer does the things he does at his age. Like, you don't need to be putting shirts under your fork, or oh my god, forks under your shirt and again jumped on. Like, come on, man, you're what, 58 or something? Like, you can relax. You've wrestled hardcore most of your career. You can chill, my man.
Yeah. I'm just really glad that Steve won the match, because, like, I was really afraid that they were going to keep the title on Dreamer and probably, like, derailed, like, fan perception of the entire show because of it, because we don't need Dreamer as champion in 2024. But, yeah.
No, definitely not.
But, yeah, it was the right result, and it was exactly what we wanted to see. Like, Steve just absolutely brutalized Dreamer, so I'm happy with it.
Yeah. So that basically covers the entire pre-show. Nothing really else came out of it, but moving on into the main card, the show opens with a mini, I wouldn't say mini, show opens with like a, it's not really a promo because it was pre-recorded. It was like an opening package, but voiceover by Eric Young, where he just gave like basically one of those like we were taken away, but now we're back kind of things about TNA, and then ending it kind of with like a we are TNA. Very, you know, generic, like this is our house, this is our show. And we're back to putting business, standing on our business kind of stuff. Got the crowd into it. The entire roster was on the ramp. And then the show opened up with the Knockouts Ultimate X match, which was Tasha Steelz, Alicia Edwards, Giselle Shaw, Jody Threat, Zaya Brookside, and is it Danny or Dania? I think it's Danny. Danny Luna.
Hey, Luna, yeah.
Which Ultimate X match. Which is to for the right to challenge for the Knockouts title. This match was a lot of fun. It was a good opener to get the crowd into it, because Ultimate X is a great match to get people to be like, whoa, oh shit, kind of stuff. So it was very much like just like kind of like an opener, nothing too over the top. Could have went, I think if it went a little longer, it would be even more well received. But it was a very kind of like basic, like this is like just like jumping off of shit and climbing up the trusses and stuff. This match was won by Giselle Shaw, which was a little bit of a surprise to me. I was kind of expecting, actually, you know what? I don't know why it was a surprise to me. It wasn't a surprise to me. The only other person I could have possibly seen winning it was like Tasha Steelz. But so it's kind of like the obvious winner was obvious and they, or, Giselle Shaw won. But, what are your guys' thoughts on this opening match for the pay-per-view?
Yeah, firstly, for me, it was great to see two new signees in there. So, obviously very familiar with Danny Luna and Zaya Brookside from their appearances in the UK, particularly Zaya Brookside. I sort of first saw her for my local promotion, Bellatrix, probably in 2017. So really early in her career. So it's great to see her getting the opportunity in TNA. Danny Luna is a much improved performer over the last couple of years as well. Done a lot of work with Flax Morgan Webster and Mark Andrews as part of Subculture. And yeah, like you, I was sort of half expecting Giselle to win from the competitors. I think the fact Tasha's won this match previously suggested that perhaps it wasn't going to be her this time. Yeah, really enjoyed it. It was lots of fast-paced action, some good moves. You've got a lot of the usual spots for an Ultimate X match of someone hanging from the rope and someone dragging their feet down or trying to spear them off. And yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, or like grabbing their legs and then power bombing them kind of stuff. Very, you know, just like, oh no, I'm hanging precariously and then getting yanked down. I've seen one third of this match in person. I've seen Giselle Shaw wrestle in person against Maki Ito, and I've seen Jody Threat wrestle in person. Currently blanking on who I saw her wrestle against. Jody Threat, I expected to be kind of the I'm going to do some batshit crazy stuff in this match kind of wrestler, which she was. She did the batshit crazy stuff in the match. Giselle Shaw, I expected more of like the I'm going to be like the top pick to win. Casey, what was your thoughts on the match?
Yeah, the match was fine. Firstly, I think like the match was okay, but as a like Ultimate X match, it wasn't that amazing to me, like compared to other Ultimate X's. But yeah, the match itself was fine. Really liked Dani Luna in the match. Like she did great. It was a great showing for her. Giselle winning, that was to me that was like the obvious choice. But overall, yeah, all the women did pretty well in the match.
Yeah, and then following the match, TNA made an official announcement that Xia Brookside has signed with the promotion. Club Venus is slowly taking over the world. We got representation in TNA and now representation in AEW and now representation in TNA. Yeah. Do we have any thoughts and or opinions about Xia Brookside signing with the promotion? Personally, I'm all for it. I think that's a great grab by TNA. She's been kind of like flowing around for a few years now since her release from WWE. She'd never really had a proper home. I liked her in Club Venus over in Stardom with Mariah May and Mina Shirakawa. But all in all, she was only there for like a few months at the beginning of last year. And then she was kind of just flowing around the indies again. So it's good to see her find like a proper home now. Where she can say, like, I am part of this promotion.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, certainly the Knockouts division needed a few new signees and, you know, certainly added some depth to it. And I think she'll have some really good matches over the coming couple of years.
Yeah. I'm really, like, it's nice to see her getting signed. I really like that TNA has, like, decided to, like, take a deep dive into like the UK scene and sign like a bunch of UK talent. So hopefully like we see more UK talent in TNA soon, and hopefully and most likely we're getting like another show in the UK pretty soon.
Yeah, I think that's where it's kind of like directing towards. Is just like the moving towards another UK show, because that's now their third British talent they've signed over the last few months, with Leon Slater and Trent Seven as well being signed by the company.
Well, and also Harley Hudson is another one who's was signed at the end of last year.
Yes.
I saw her wrestle just for Christmas, and she's got a lot of work to do to get to the real top level, but she's certainly got a lot of potential and a lot of promise. I know she's moved out to Canada now for some training, and I think that'll really help. And I'm sure we'll see her on Impact soon.
Right. Yes. So it's definitely a point towards that they are very much keeping an eye on the UK indies. So that's good. I appreciate the kind of that TNA is being able to just like kind of spot talent that other promotions aren't seeing. As like clearly, like talents like Leon Slater. Slater is someone I expected that may have went to AEW at some point, but it's good to see that like people are actually now considering TNA as an option to sign to instead of going to AEW or in some cases returning to WWE, just stuff like that. And TNA is also kind of now being seen more as another competitor rather than just being the promotion that the ex-WWE guys go to.
Yeah, I agree. I think the AEW and WWE roster, so they're both quite bloated, especially AEW's. And as we see contracts coming up for renewal at the end of the year or towards later in this year, I think we'll see more and more considering TNA as an option.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Moving on to the second match of the night, which was PCO versus Dirty Dango. I know, like, when I looked at the card, this was the match I was least looking forward to out of the entire card. And I was right. It was
the worst card, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was garbage. It was a PCO suicide dive, and then PCO throwing Dirty Dango back into the ring, and then Alpha Bravo getting involved, and PCO spearing Alpha Bravo, or not spearing Alpha Bravo, what did Alpha Bravo do? Alpha Bravo, like, punched him or something, or slapped him. Something really stupid. I don't, like, this is how little I remember from this, like, minute long.
Grabbed PCO's foot as he was attempting to do the PCO salt, and that allowed Dango to roll out of the ring and PCO just take a fall from the top rope.
Because that was what caused the disqualification, was the ref seeing Alpha Bravo grab PCO's foot, which, like, I've never seen that cause a disqualification before.
Not since 1980, no.
I don't think I've ever seen a disqualification caused by just grabbing someone's foot. I've seen wrestlers kind of be like refs, like, catch, like, them tripping a wrestler or something, and then being like, whoa, you can't do that. You're out of here. I've seen stuff like that, but I've never actually seen, like, a referee see someone grab the foot and just be like, okay, nope, that's it. We can't do this match anymore. So that was a minute long, which, as you said, Dango rolled out of the ring, PCO dived on all of them, and then Santino Marella came out, and Santino Marella was like, or no, sorry, not Santino Marella, didn't come, or he didn't come
Rhino, out. Rhino came out first, didn't he?
Rhino came out first to even the odds, and with a chair, chased off everyone. Then Santino Marella came out and was kind of like, whoa, the first TNA show in like 5 years. I'm not letting this match end like this. We're going to make it a tag team match. But wait, there's three of you, two of them, they need a third partner. And then he revealed the third partner to be Jake something.
He did have a really impressive entrance when he done the dive into the ring, double clothesline. That was the one bit of the match I really liked.
Yeah, that was good. Just the leaping clothesline, taking people out, PCO doing his spearing and everything. Gotta be honest, I kind of tuned out of this one just because the disqualification bullshit at the beginning was very much like, I didn't care about this match before. Then we got DQ. I don't care about this match now. Rhino's fine. Jake something's fine. Don't give a shit about Oleg Prudius, formerly Vladimir Kozlov. Don't give a shit about Alpha Bravo. I don't really care about Dirty Dango. And then that match happened, PCO Rhino, Jake something won that. Any other thoughts about this match?
Yeah, this match was a TV segment match that was on pay-per-view for, like, some reason. I really don't know why TNA decided to put this match on pay-per-view. I guess this was supposed to be some other match they were going to plan to make, put on the card. But
maybe.
Yeah, but that match probably, like, fell through, so they just went like, let's just give, like, a simple PCO match and throw some other guys in there just to, have, like, a house show style match just to get the crowd happy.
Yeah, just like a little, like, piss break, go get a beer. We're underway, but, like, get all of your system right now, so then you can sit through the next 2.5 hours we got going on. Steve, you have any thoughts on this, or am I cool to move on to the next one?
Yeah, I'm keen to get on.
Keen to get on. I don't want to talk about this anymore. No more PCO, please. But following this match, they showed some footage of a limousine pulling up outside and someone stepping out wearing high heels, and we see the back of a woman with blonde hair. Ooh, foreshadowing.
I don't know why, but I immediately thought Mandy Rose.
I also, like, saw the blonde hair and was thinking, trying to, like, kind of be like, okay, who's not signed to a promotion that could be that? Mandy Rose was a name that came to mind. I would have been cool with Mandy. I would have liked if, like to have seen Mandy in TNA. It's she hasn't wrestled in a while. I think I've been following her a little bit. I think she works at like a sub shop, like her dad's sub shop or something. So it'd been cool to have seen her get back in the ring after doing what she does, but also being able to do what she does. Unfortunately, it was not Mandy Rose. We will get to who it was. But speaking of surprises, the next match was a unscheduled match for the Knockouts World Tag Titles as MK Ultra defended against the returning Rosemary and Havoc of Decay. This match was fine. I was kind of whatever about it once they announced that it was Decay. To be honest, I forgot that Decay was off TV and or like they were like kayfabe like gone to hell or something or whatever. Tom, I don't remember his current name. Tom Phillips. Hannafin. Tom Hannafin was saying like that they're like, we thought that they were gone to hell and like this stuff. But yeah, they came back. I've completely forgot that they were gone in the first place. So once it was kind of like, oh, it's just Decay. Okay, cool. And then that match happened. It was fine. There was a few cool moments, like Masha hitting Havoc with the snowplow, and then she kicked out a one. The double choke slam on MK Ultra. Just kind of like little highlights of that. And in the end, Rosemary and Havoc won, and we have new Knockouts tag titles. And it's a good thing I didn't read what was on TNA site, because TNA has MK Ultra retaining, which is not at all correct. I know that, Casey, you had some thoughts about this. You were not really a fan of the title change?
No, not really. But I was like, well, at the moment I wasn't, but like, given it like a day to think about it, I think it was necessary simply only because no one else could like realistically beat MK Ultra. They're like Masha and Kelly Kelly are like two of the best Knockouts TNA has, and they were pretty much unstoppable as a tag team. And if like any team had to beat them, Decay is probably like the best one, simply because like the TNA crowd loves Decay. Yeah, I was like, I'll be more fine with this if this actually leads to either Masha or Killer Kelly going on to for the Knockouts World title. But yeah, the match itself was fine.
I would be down for Masha Slamovich winning the women's or the Knockouts title. I really like Masha Slamovich. I also like Kelly Kelly as well. I like both of them, but I really like Masha Slamovich. And I think she would be a fantastic Knockouts world champion.
Yeah, agree. The thing for me, when the champs came to the ring and it was going to be an impromptu tag title match, I was really expecting to see someone new come out. And obviously, Rosemary and Havoc came out was a return, but they'd both been on TV recently as other competitors, so under other names. So it wasn't really a massive return. I thought if it had been Rosemary and Ali, or the Bunny, it would have been a much more interesting dynamic. But obviously, it was a I was expecting the Bunny to appear somewhere, but no, she wasn't there.
Yeah, really shows like the lack of depth in the Knockouts tag division.
Yeah,
I was like, but hopefully with all these new signings recently, hopefully that can like fresh things up within the division.
Yeah, for sure. Bunny making a return to TNA would have been really cool. She was Ali something in TNA. I'm blanking on the last name.
I think she was just Ali.
Oh, yeah. I think it's just Ali. Yeah, I think you're right. I thought she had a last name. I was wrong. But yeah, Ali returning to TNA would have been really dope. That's someone that would have been very properly utilized by TNA, especially now that she's had more TV exposure as the Bunny. So she has also built up more of like a fan base around her. So moving to TNA would have also brought like a lot of those fans to watch the show to see her. But moving on from the champions, Scott D'Amore came out. I was thinking when he first came out, this was going to be the big reveal of like the, you know, they had the whole like, oh, you'll never know who'll show up kind of thing.
So yeah, I was thinking like this Triple H or someone, yeah.
I was thinking that this was going to be like him making a big deal about a new signing, which like I'm all for those kind of things. But it was a new signing, but it was still a very big deal. He introduced the CEO of AAA. I'm going to butcher this name. Dorian Joaquin Roldan Pena. I'm sorry if I butcher that. but he introduced Dorian, and they announced a new partnership between TNA and AAA. This was expected, at least on my part. I expected this was going to come at some point, especially since they recently had that TNA AAA collab show a couple months ago now. So this was kind of like, it was coming in the direction. I knew it was going to happen. But I'm glad that they made a more proper, like big deal out of it. Rather than other promotions kind of just being like, yeah, we work together. But yeah, do we have any thoughts about the AAA TNA, partnership now? Any like dream matches anyone would like to see?
I mean, I'm very excited. Having watched a few Triple Manias the last couple of years, there's, you know, obviously Psycho Clown's been in TNA before, but I think he'd be one I'd like to see back again. But I just recall one of the highlights for me of Ring of Honor in the later pre-Tony Khan years were the Lucha Libre matches. And I think if we can get regularly great Lucha Libre matches on Impact and TNA pay-per-views, I think that's only a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. This is especially interesting considering I want, like, this kind of like blurs the lines a bit of like AEW's partnership with AAA. I don't know if it'll like shut down because of this, but we have seen El Hijo del Vikingo on a lot of AEW programming as of late, like with him defending at Final Battle and then him defending on Rampage against Black Taurus as well. But there's also been some CMLL talent on there, which there's a lot of history between AAA and CMLL. So it'll be interesting to see what happens between AAA and AEW with this partnership, as they've have had that falling out with TNA following the whole Kenny Omega stuff. But yeah, I'm excited for this partnership as well. And I can't wait to see more Lucha Libre talent in TNA and more TNA talent in AAA. And I just hope AAA books good, I guess. Casey, do you have any thoughts on the TNA AAA partnership?
Not much. Because like I know very little about like AAA. I was like, I like a couple of the talents, so hopefully we can see like more Lucha Libre, like, well, good Lucha Libre representation on like American TV. But yeah, not much I can say.
Yeah, right on. Speaking of AAA talent, the next match had a three-way for the Impact X Division title, which saw AAA versus New Japan versus TNA in some way. Chris Sabin defending his X Division title against Kushida, which he is signed with TNA now, but he's will always be known for the New Japan. And then the current AAA Mega Champion, El Hijo del Vikingo. This match was, I think, my match of the night.
Yeah, no, I think it was as well.
It wasn't my match of the night. There was one other match that, I, in my opinion, was better than this match. But it was definitely, like, at the time when it happened, I was very much like, whoa, wow, damn, what a match. It was very much what you expected for Vikingo, Kushida, Chris Sabin. As soon as the match got announced, I was like, this could very much steal the show. A lot of great moments during this match. There was like the combo submissions, like Kushida with the hammerlock suplex to Sabin on top of Vikingo. Vikingo with that beautiful moonsault to the outside on both the guys. Kushida, Hane, a flying senton of Vikingo, and then both of them got taken out by a top rope crossbody from Sabin. Stuff like that, one-footed step-up springboard 450 from Vikingo. Like, how the fuck does he do these things? He's absolutely insane. I like every single time Vikingo wrestles, he just does something that you're just like, how the fuck? This doesn't make sense. You should not be able to do this. And he does it every single match without fail. And then Sabin said, oh yeah, that was a cool springboard 450 you just did. I'm about to launch your head through the fucking ramp and hit a slingshot Canadian destroyer on Vikingo on the ramp. That just took Vikingo completely out of the match, and then Sabin got back in the ring, fought with Kushida for a bit, turned the hoverboard lock into the cradle shock, and won and retained the title. I just said it, but I'm going to say it again. Holy shit, that Canadian destroyer.
It was definitely the spot of the night, wasn't it, in terms of if you watch one move over the coming years, it'll be that one.
Absolutely insane spot. Also, it was a springboard Canadian destroyer, not a slingshot Canadian destroyer. Slingshot Canadian destroyer would have been equally insane. Actually, I think the slingshot would have been more insane. I think that would have been a lot more impressive to pull off. Any thoughts from you on this one, Casey?
Yeah, like going into this, I legit did not have no clue who was going to win this match, because like I was like, you can keep the belt on Sabin because he's a really great wrestler, reliable to have. Then you have Kushida, who just newly signed. So like before the preview, I thought one of those two was going to win, but then right before they officially announced the partnership with AAA, I was thinking maybe they will give it to Vikingo just to like really christen this deal. So I was like on the edge of my seat, just seeing who was going to like win this match. I legit did not have a clue who was going to win.
Yeah. This could have went anyway, really. Like when they announced it, I think like the only one where like I wasn't 100% like this guy could win on was Vikingo, just because he's not signed to the promotion. So like it would have been cool to see 2-belt Vikingo, but at the same time though, it's kind of like, he's would be a little bit more tricky to get a hold of to defend the title in comparison to the other two, just because he would have to also have to book dates. Well, he would have dates booked with AAA and then also like indie shows and everything. So it would have been a little bit more tricky to have had Vikingo as champion in comparison to just Sabin or Kushida. But nonetheless, yeah, this was really anyone's game. Like anyone could have won this match. I was a little bit surprised that Sabin retained, in all honesty. I thought they were going to use this to give Kushida a big push as the X Division champion. But yeah, this was a really, really strong match. Definitely up there. Great start to the X Division for TNA. Steve, you have any further thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, just like you, Vikingo, every time I see him, impresses me. I just worry that at some point he's going to do a move and it's going to go slightly wrong and he's going to be out for 6-9 months of a serious injury. He's just that kind of a wrestler, isn't he? He's like Will Ospreay was 5 years ago, in that sense of he just does some mad moves, and how he does it, I don't know. It's incredible.
Yeah. I don't know how to further prove a point off of that. That's was really well put. Yeah, he just every time he's gonna break something at some point, and then we're just kind of gonna be like, oh man, I guess McKean's gonna have to slow down, and he's just probably gonna come back and just do some other batshit crazy thing right away.
But he's had a couple of injuries before and he's just come back from them, so really, really impressive. But yeah, you know, just enjoyed the flow of the match. There was constant movement, you know, you were glued to your screen, there wasn't any pauses in action. As you expect from Next Division, really fast-paced. And just, as I say, for me, that was my favourite match of the show, albeit there are a number of others coming up that were equally good.
Yeah. Following that high-speed match between those three guys, we got a match of big, meaty men slapping meat. Josh Alexander versus the debuting Alex Hammerstone. Hammerstone, known for MLW, of course, former MLW world champion. He had a, I want to say, 644-day reign as the champions. Not the longest in the title's history, but definitely up there for it. I think it's the second longest. But this was definitely the right match to bring Hammerstone into TNA with. He had a very strong showing against Alexander, was able to show off his power, able to show off his strength. Alexander is able to show off his power and show off his strength, show off his just technical wrestling ability. Just really good between these two guys. It was definitely a change of pace in comparison to the previous one. So it had my attention. It just didn't have my attention as like committed in comparison to the X Division title. But yeah, both these guys just had still a very phenomenal match. Hammerstone did not win this match, unfortunately. Alexander was the one that did take the win in this, which wasn't too, like, not super surprising. It was kind of more expected. But all in all, definitely very strong showing for Hammerstone, and potentially we might see more of him. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I think we'll definitely see a rematch of this at some point. You know, for me, Alexander is the biggest star in TNA. So, yeah, it wasn't a surprise he got the victory, but I've seen a bit of Alex Hammerstone in MLW, especially when he had the faction with Richard Holiday and MJF. And so I knew he could go and this is going to be a good match, but it sort of exceeded my expectations to a degree. You know, I think they really gelled really well. There were lots of good reversals and, you know, sort of lots of hard hitting as you'd expect. And it was, yeah, really good to see Alexander getting the win with a C4 spike.
Classic Alexander move. I love C4s, a C4 spike. It's such a great move. Any thoughts for me, Casey?
Like, not much more to add on. This is like the first Hammerstone match I've seen, and like watch this match, I really understand why everyone online hypes up Hammerstone so much, because like he looks great, he has a great moveset, like everything about him says like main event star. So hopefully we can see him more in TNA, and I'd like seeing a match between him and Alexander.
No word as of right now of if Hammerstone has signed with the promotion, but that would be a very good get for what's his name? TNA. I don't know why I blanked on the name. but yeah, just it would be a very good get for them. I think it's definitely worth grabbing. But yeah, any further thoughts before we move on?
No, not
for me. But yeah, that was a great follow up from the X Division match.
Yeah, right on. All right, so following that, before we get into the next match, or actually, sorry, no, we are going to get right into the next match. I was getting a little bit ahead of myself. Following that match was the 4-way for the TNA World Tag Titles as Bullet Club's ABC defends the belts against the Rascals, GYV, and Mike Bailey and Laredo Kid. This was supposed to be Mike Bailey and Trent Seven, but due to the storms that came through the U.S. and Canada over that weekend, there were some travel complications, and unfortunately, Trent Seven was not able to make the show. So they did replace him with Laredo Kid, which is always a welcome. Laredo Kid is always welcomed around these parts. But yeah, ABC would not be having flashbacks of Slammiversary on this night, as this time they actually defended the title successfully in a tag team 4-way. This, in my opinion, was match of the night. I thought this was just like slightly better than the 3-way. I think probably just because it got a bit more time than the 3-way. The 3-way was very good, but it felt like they were playing with the time they had, which in part kind of felt a little rushed. This one had more time. It felt more paced out. It felt better to me. And yeah, it was good that ABC won, and ABC also pinned the Rascals, who played a big part in the losing the titles last time that they had the four-way match. Subculture was the ones who won the titles. Yeah, Grizzly Young Vets had a great appearance in this match. Speedball McBailey is always beloved. Loretta Kidd was a really good combo with him. Rascals are a great tag team. ABC is a dominant tag team. I think that sums up my thoughts.
Yeah, I was slightly surprised that the Rascals were the ones taking the pin, because out of the four teams, you think, well, Grizzled Young Veterans might be back from time to time. Speedball and the Laredo Kid are not sort of a long-term team. So you think, well, if the Rascals take the pin, then who are the next challengers for ABC? But, you know, we could see the Rascals getting another opportunity, or we could see, you know, potentially someone like the System trying to go for all the belts.
Yeah, I hope not. I'm just gonna be very, very blunt. I don't want the System to be tag champions. Brian Myers and Eddie Edwards does not at all intrigue me as tag team champions. They could challenge for the belts. I wouldn't care if they challenge for the belts, but if they beat ABC, I would just not all be impressed. They're just like miles ahead of Edwards and Myers. They shouldn't be champions at any point, in my opinion, just because, like, well, I mean, they're two veteran guys. They don't need to be champions. They've been around for years, especially Edwards. Edwards has been wrestling for decades. They just don't need the titles, nor should they have the titles. It's just pointless to be giving them titles. That's just my opinion. Casey, any thoughts on the match?
This match actually really surprised me. It might be just because, like, I'm so used to how WWE does their, like, multi-team tag matches, where it's, like, there's, like, very formulaic. But with this match, it was, like, it flowed, like, really well. There was a lot of action, and, like, everyone got a spotlight in it. So I was, like, I was really surprised by this match. And, yeah, I do agree, like, this was, like, match of the night.
Yeah, for sure. I am all for great tag team wrestling, and this was definitely that. All right, so moving on. Before we get into the next match, the previous surprise guest that we mentioned earlier, the lady with the blonde hair, was revealed to be Ash by Elegance, the former Dana Brooke.
Or Ash by Excellence, as Matthew Raywalt kept calling her, and Tom Hannifin had to correct.
Which is even more funny, considering he was the one who made a big deal about him, or about her. He was like, oh, like, I've had my inside sources all day, Tom. Like, I've heard so much about this. Like, yes, it's her. I was right, kind of thing. And then just did not get her name right whatsoever. Like, made a whole big deal out of, like, this is, like, I'm so smart because I got all this insider dirt sheet info about Ash by Elegance showing up, and then I don't call her the right name once.
But no, it's quite amusing, and she's turned up with a manager as well, hasn't she? So
yeah. George Iceman.
Yeah.
George Iceman?
Yeah.
Who I confess to know nothing about. I saw his name mentioned today, because I think she'd mentioned it in a post, and I've got no background as to if he's got an independent career or not.
I was like, I believe he has a backstage role with TNA. Yeah, back on, like, BTI, he had, like, a little segment where it's like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, it try, like, gives the fans that watch BTI a heads up on, like, what you might expect for, like, that week's episode, or what might happen on whatever, like, pay-per-view. So I also think he mainly is around the UK, not UK, Canadian indie scene, because I believe he's associated with Josh Alexander and Ethan Page when Ethan was in, like, Impact.
According to his Twitter, he is the TNA tour manager. So yeah, he does indeed have a backstage role. So as for Ash, okay, I guess. Sure.
I think I'll be interested to see that there's times in her WWE career where I thought she's got potential and she will improve more and more over the years. And she's never really fulfilled that promise, whether that's WWE booking backstage, whether that's she's not quite there. I guess this is the opportunity, isn't it? So, you know, we've seen what Trinity's done. She'll probably start from a better place in terms of her career in WWE, but she's really done something spectacular in TNA, and Ash by elegance has got the same opportunity to do so.
The thing with Trinity, though, is that, like, with Trinity, you looked at her in WWE and was like, yeah, she's a good wrestler. I never once looked at Dana Brooke and was like, yeah, she could be a future world champion. To be completely honest, I didn't even recognize her at first. I don't know if, like, she's had some sort of, like, facial surgery, or if it's just, like, she lost weight and it's showing her face. But, like, I saw this woman and I was like, I don't recognize her. I don't know who this is. And it seemed like the crowd didn't either, because there was, like, no reaction to her whatsoever. And then I went on Twitter and people were like, oh, it's the former, like, formerly known as Dana Brooke. And I was just like,
really? And I did have fears then that this was the, you never know who's showing up section of the show.
Yeah, like, they made a big deal about the former 24/7 champion Dana Brooke.
I feels like it's a bit unfair for Ash, because, like, when she was in WWE, always, like, seemed like she never really got, like, a proper chance to, like, showcase what she do. It's always, like, bits here and there, but never had, like, a big opportunity to really showcase what she can do. But whatever you think the reason was, she now has, like, that, like, stage now where she can actually showcase what she can do. And who knows? So, like, this could be, like, the thing that can turn her career around. It's not, like, it's not unheard of for, like, a WWE talent that was, like, people thought nothing of when they were in WWE, come to TNA, and then they show, oh, wait, yeah, they are a really good talent, and they are a main event star.
Steve Macklin, for one, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she could definitely make me eat my words, but at the same time, though, anytime I think of Dana Brooke, I think about the time where she was coming down to the ring, and she walked over to that little kid and was like, what's up, buddy? And the kid just no-sold her and just, like, had his hand on, like, the barricade, not all paying attention to her. And she just, like, fist bumps his limp hand that's not all paying any attention and just continues on like nothing happened. Like, I just only think of that whenever I see her now. And it's like, and her just getting buried by this small child. But yeah, she showed up, smiled, and then we got on to the Knockouts World Title match, and they didn't show her once after that.
Didn't show Mercedes and Bayley as well in the crowd.
Mercedes and Bayley were there. They also, no one mentioned them, though. They were very much, like, incognito about it.
They obviously couldn't show Bayley, and presumably they couldn't show Mercedes as well, otherwise they would have done, but yeah.
Yeah, like, there would have been mention of it if, you know, a certain company wasn't so anti wrestling and pro monopolized the entire industry. Cough, cough, WWE, cough. But yeah, Mercedes, Moné, and Bayley were also in attendance to cheer on their friend Trinity. They were, like, way out of the way in the rafters. Mercedes, like, 15, like, what was it, like, 12 hours after the show? It's like at, like, 5 in the morning Pacific Standard Time, just posted backstage photos of them with Trinity and stuff on her Instagram story. And one of the photos she posted was, like, where she and Bayley was sitting from, and it looks like that they were a bit off to the left from where, like, the French and English commentary teams were, which they showed a few times throughout the night. So they were, like, very much, like, out of the way and isolated from everyone else. So a lot of people didn't really see them, unless, like, or except for the few that got photos of them and put it on Twitter. But yeah, just there to support their friend Trinity Knockouts World Champion as she defended the title against Jordan Grace. Jordan again here through the collar shot gauntlet she won at Bound for Glory. I gotta be completely honest, my attention was split at this point for two reasons. One being that this match wasn't as interesting to me as the last couple, last few, I mean. And B, this match was on at the same time as Battle in the Valley was getting started. So my attention was split that way, and then the whole Jack Perry at Battle in the Valley thing happened during this match, so my attention kind of went like 80% Battle in the Valley, 20% this match because of that stuff happening, and then I went back to this match 50-50, and then it ended. I felt very whatever about this match. It was very much like a technical versus strong style match, with Trinity having more of the technical side and Grace having more of like the powerhouse side to it. It was fine. I don't really have too much to say on it. Grace countering Starstruck into a German and then hitting the Juggernaut driver. That was cool. And we have a new Knockouts World Champion, which I'm not too keen on. I mean, Trinity's probably going back to WWE. I feel like that's probably why they had given the title back to Grace. She is scheduled to be at the upcoming tapings. I don't know when the tapings would air. I don't know if they would air like post Royal Rumble or if like before it. So it's possible that Trinity could be on her way out and potentially be returning to the Royal Rumble. I could be overthinking this, and it's just a thing of that they wanted to give the title to Jordan for the new era. But we shall see in the next couple of weeks.
It's certainly rumored that that's what's going to happen, but yeah, we'll wait and see. For me, I really enjoyed this match. I think if you sort of miss parts of it, I'd definitely rewatch it. I think Jordan Grace is perhaps one of the most underrated women's wrestlers around. Certainly from a TNA point of view, she's been invaluable over the last 3 years. Just in terms of the match she's had with Diano and Mickey and now with Trinity, definitely very hard-hitting. And I think it made for a good match of styles. Slightly exceeded my expectations this match, but obviously not quite up to the level of a couple of the earlier matches on the show.
Yeah, this match was really good. Like, Grace gave Trinity her like best match since Trinity came into the company. Like, I'm happy that Grace won the title back, and I think it was absolutely needed because like since Diana left TNA and Trinity most likely leaving as well, I feel like they need. I think like by default, Grace is probably their biggest star, so it was necessary.
Yeah, like I'm not keen on it in terms of like I prefer Trinity as champion over Jordan, but it's not a bad switch. It's like it's fine to put the title on Jordan. Jordan has the history with TNA, so it's not like someone just walked in and they made them the champion. I'm fine with Jordan carrying that longevity of TNA with her with the title, but at the same time though, it's kind of like I would have liked Trinity to be champion for a little while longer. But yeah, any other thoughts about this match?
No, not really.
I think as you sort of mentioned, you know, earlier, I think it'd be good to see where this heads now and with Jordan as champion, who steps up. And for me, that's got to be Masha Slamovic.
Yes, Masha definitely should. That would be I think that would be a fantastic match. Just two powerhouses going at it. But at the same time, though, it's probably going to be Giselle Shaw first, just because she didn't win Ultimate X. So most likely, I think it's going to be like Giselle Shaw first with Ultimate X and then Jordan against like Masha or someone. But Yes. And then we move into the main event. TNA World Champion Alex Shelley defending against Moose. Moose is in this championship match because of Feast or Fired from November, which he won the world title briefcase. This was whatever. I expected this to be whatever. Alex Shelley's great, but he's not the same he was like 10, 20 years ago. Moose is fine. He's not the same he was 5 to 10 years ago. It was a match. That's about how I can put it. It was a match. The system interfered near the end, kind of being a distraction, but then Chris Sabin and Kushida came in, fought them off, which, like, they fought them to the back, and then D'Angelo Williams kind of just stand there for a bit and distracted Shelley for a moment. Shelley then, like, the advantage was taken by Moose for that, and then D'Angelo just kind of walked to the back. He didn't get fought or anything. He was just kind of just like, all right, cool, the one distraction, it's done, I'm out of here, and then he just left, which, like, okay, cool, I guess, thanks for coming out. It was, yeah, I think fine sums up the match. But Moose countered the shell shock in the end into a spear, which Shelley won, or not Shelley, sorry, he won the match off of. So we do have a new TNA World Champion, which, okay, I guess, if we have to.
Like, I know you're not, like, very keen on it, but it's like, I think, like, I was shocked by it as well, but I think Moose was probably is the perfect person to be world champion in this new era. And, like, because, like, I will always, like, I like Moose. I really do like Moose. His matches, I always find his matches entertaining. And it's like, no matter what TNA does with him, he always makes the most of, like, what he's given. And for that, like, his matches, I always find his matches entertaining. As for him being world champion, I think he's the perfect guy to be world champion. Just as, like, be like a final boss type character for, like, everyone else. And that, like, opens the door to like, so many different people challenging him for the title, like Speedball, like Macklin, like Jake something maybe. And it's like, Moose can work with everyone and the match will be good. So I was like, I know you don't really like it that much, but I think this is, like, the right choice.
Yeah, I agree. And I think because he's got the long-term contract as well with TNA, you've got that extra certainty there that he's going to be around to see some of those stories and feuds out. You know, clearly the, Alex Shelley will get a rematch. There's potential for Josh Alexander to get another match against Moose, and their last match I thought was fantastic. So, you know, we could see some good matches coming up, and it adds a bit more excitement in terms of who's going to step up next. And there's lots of contenders to go against a monster heel.
Yeah, I disagree. Moose is whatever with the choice. But my thing with it is, like, in my opinion, Shelley should have retained, just because I think Shelley would have been a good champion to go into the new era of TNA with. The Mercy Machine Guns have been there since the very beginning, or not the very beginning. Actually, I think it's been, what, I think they debuted in like 2006. They've been there for like most of the history of TNA / Impact. That, like, him getting his big win last year was a big deal, and I think he should have been champion going into the new era of TNA, or he was champion going into the new era. But at the same time, though, I think he should have stayed champion and held onto the title probably for another, like, I don't know, few months. Lose it at what's the next pay per view?
Rebellion.
Rebellion. Yeah, that's their next major pay per view show. Thank you. I think Rebellion would have been a better place for him to lose that. That's just my opinion on it. Moose is, like, I don't know. I have thoughts and opinions on Moose, which kind of I don't really want to get into at this very moment. but he's very, I don't know, he feels very one-dimensional with his matches. He's not the best in terms of, like, working a certain style. He has his own style, and, like, that's what he works in every match. He's not the greatest at adapting to other people's styles, in my opinion, but he is a cool choice to, as in terms of, like, a powerhouse champion. As just champion as a whole, I would have kept on Shelly, but powerhouse champion, like the new, like, David versus Goliath kind of stuff in the future for a guy, like you're saying, for guys like Speedball Mike Bailey, for example, where, like, he's a much bigger guy. Yeah, I'm fine with him in terms of that, of like, oh, who's gonna stop this monster? But at the same time, though, it's kind of like, eh, he didn't need it. He could have just had the good match. Shelly keeps the title. Shelly gets a big feud, loses the Rebellion. But there was something else that happened post-match. After Moose won the title, the rest of the system came out onto the ramp and kind of just like applauding stuff. It looks like that was it for the show, ending with Moose standing tall. And then as they're showing Moose with the championship, music hits. No one knows what's going on. And then it comes up on the Titantron, Nick Nemeth. Moose is watching the entrance because, well, his music's playing, so everyone expected from the entrance. But surprise, Nick Nemeth didn't come from the entrance ramp. He came from behind. He's in the ring, and he's just standing there menacingly as he waits for Moose to realize what's going on. Moose turns around. They give each other a stare down. Nemeth super kicks Moose, hits him with the zigzag. I don't know what he calls it now, but it's the zigzag. And then he scrambles out of the ring. Or he stands tall, like, with, like, hey, this is my motive. I'm going to be world champion. And then scrambles out of the ring and then runs into the crowd. And the crowd's going wild. And Nemeth rips off his Nemeth shirt underneath, revealing that he's wearing a TNA shirt. Nick Nemeth is the newest signing for TNA wrestling. And that is how the show ends, with the crowd losing their shit, chanting TNA, as Nick Nemeth is standing beyond the sea of TNA fans with his TNA shirt. And that's how the show ends. Great pickup for TNA. I've seen a lot of people saying that this would have been an even better signing like 5-10 years ago, which, yeah, I mean, that's an argument can be made for a lot of people that are up in like their late 30s, early 40s, where like they would have been better there like 5-10 years ago, which, yeah. But Nick Nemeth is still a huge name for Impact or TNA to get at this stage of their rebranding. And I think it's going to actually benefit a lot, especially for him and also for the company. He's busy. He's a busy bee. He has stuff going on with David Finlay in New Japan. And now he's got stuff going on with Moose in TNA. He's a busy bee. What are your guys' thoughts on the new Nick Nemeth appearance and signing?
Yeah, I've been a long time fan of his, so I think it's a really good signing. I mean, it would have been sort of slightly more impactful if it had happened pre-Wrestle Kingdom and that initial surprise of him being in New Japan. But he's always great in the ring. He's good on the mic. He's a very funny man. He's entertaining. He's got a lot of experience that he'll be able to pass down to some of the younger talent. And I just think, you know, it's a win-win for both Nick and for TNA. Just really interesting to see where this pans out. If you look at what Christian's done in AEW and you think about the age factor, age isn't necessarily a factor here. You know, I think TNA view him as a sort of 2 or 3 year signing rather than a next 10 or 15 year signing. And clearly he'll have a lot of great matches on the TNA roster.
Yeah, for sure. He's like, as you said, like, age isn't really a factor nowadays in wrestling. I don't think it's really ever been a factor in wrestling, but especially now. Yeah, I think that's what TNA's hoping for, is that they get like a Christian Cage or Adam Copeland out of this with Nick Nemeth, where he's like has actually just like been quietly really fucking good. Even better than what he's shown, and he's just gonna be an absolute beast when he's able to wrestle. But yeah, this big signing. Casey, you got any thoughts on this?
Not much to add on. It's just like I'm just happy that he's like finally out of WWE and just like in a different environment to really show what he can do. Because I believe like Nick was always like a world class like talent. So I was like, now that he's like free from WWE, he can finally show the world, pun intended, what he can really do.
Yeah. I 100% agree about that. Like he definitely needed a change of scenery, and also it's just, I think it's better for him as well for like his comedy and stuff, being able to have a bit more of a lenient schedule. Like it wasn't like he was being used in WWE anyway, over the last few years. So it's not like, him in WWE was affecting his comedy that badly, but this is a lot more kind of like his way, his rules for that kind of stuff. So it works for him. I hope that he just enjoys whatever he's doing, going on with TNA.
And also, yeah, and the other thing just to add is that his debut has had over 1 million views on YouTube, which is fantastic exposure for TNA.
Yeah, that's absolutely huge for TNA, 100%. And also it's huge for him too, because it shows that he's still a draw in the year 2024, that people will go find his debut in TNA. So really big for him, really big for TNA. But yeah, I really hope that everything works out for Nick. He's got a busy next few months though, for sure. But that's it for Hard to Kill. We, as I said at the beginning of the show, we are recording this before the first proper episode of TNA has aired, or TNA Impact has aired. So unfortunately, we do not know anything at the moment, as we, the three of us, have avoided spoilers of the tapings. But we do have one thing that we did, all the three of us did see, just because it had like a big reaction on Twitter. It wasn't a huge spoiler, but it was Okada cutting a promo post his return to TNA, which it was just kind of like a little small thing, just being like, hey, like, I actually don't hate TNA. I really like TNA. I wouldn't say I love TNA, but like, I really like TNA. It's like, it's really cool here. The guys are cool here. Do we have any thoughts on Okada no longer having TNA as public enemy number one?
Every grudge in wrestling gets buried at some point. Whether it's Bruno Sammartino, the Ultimate Warrior, CM Punk, it all gets sorted out in the end, is the positive message.
It's the positive message if your name is not Eddie Kingston, because I don't think he'll ever get over his grudge with Claudio.
No.
He hates that man for life. There is no reconciling that French or that relationship whatsoever. But yeah, I think that's going to do it for this week's episode, unless either of you guys have any further thoughts on TNA's whole Hard to Kill, anything?
Just one final thing. I just think it's worth recognizing it was one of the best shows they've put on for several years.
Oh, yeah.
I think if that's sort of the quality of the pay-per-views we're going to get going forward, then that's a really good sign for TNA.
Oh, yeah. Like the energy itself was different with this show. It felt like a fully different show. It was TNA, of course, but it didn't feel like Impact like it was the last few years. It felt like TNA like it was in like 2014, like that kind of like more peak area of TNA. But yeah, I think that's going to do it for this episode of TNT. If you like what you heard and you want to check out more of the Wrestling Network podcast, you can do so by searching Wrestle In wherever you get your podcasts. If you want even more content, you can follow us on Twitter at Wrestle In and subscribe to the Patreon for early access to all of our interviews and podcasts, along with exclusive shows you can't find anywhere else. If you want more content from any of the voices you heard today, you can follow me on Twitter at Fusa Balor.
And you can follow me at Steve Howard 1972.
And me at KC underscore Foster 1763.
And if you want to chat with us, along with any other members of the Wrestlin team and community, you can join our Discord, which can be found on the Wrestlin site, wrestlin.com. This has been Total Nonstop Talking, and thank you for listening. We will see you next time.